Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind.
This is a problem that has been decades in the making and will not be fixed overnight.
Assembly leaders recommend a $10 million down payment as the clean water crisis in Wisconsin worsens. The controversy over whether the State Elections Commission must remove the names of registered voters who may have moved rolls on, with legal motions pending before state and federal judges. Democratic National Convention officials introduce media organizations from around the nation to Milwaukee. Milwaukee will host the July convention that will pick the party's challenger to President Donald Trump. Seven file papers to replace retiring Milwaukee County Executive Chris Aveling. And with Politics Weekly stock picks, that and more on the January 10 edition of Rewind.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
First Rewind of 2020. Happy New Year, J.R.
Same to you.
I've already broken my resolution. How are you doing?
Good, actually. Quite well.
Okay. All right. Okay. Let's talk about the news. The Speaker's Task Force on Clean Water reported, and they had, I think, 14 hearings. Mm-hmm. Each hearing, they said, lasted 6 or 8 hours. They consulted literally thousands of people. They made these recommendations. They want to spend $10 million. But before we look at, number one, hear from the co-chairs, and number two, walk through about five of these recommendations. There were no senators there. Bad sign for it becoming law?
Well, first off, is the Speaker's Task Force, so it's all made up of, you know, comprised of assembly members, but there is kind of a connection there in that the big question I have been asking about this week is what's that price tag mean for the state Senate? Because remember, there was a package of homeless bills, right? Came out of a advisory council. That's like $7 million in change over a two-year period. That's hung up in the state Senate because of the price tag. There's a contingent of the assembly or Republican caucus in the state Senate doesn't want to spend any more money right now. This is a different issue. You have water quality issues that are breaking across party lines, across geographic lines of Wisconsin. You have like issues in Milwaukee with lead pipes. We have PFAS. We have
all kinds of things. Well, talk about PFAS. The DNR press release today, they're providing water to one more homeowner in the Marinette area because of the PFAS tests in that homeowner's wells. So this is happening daily. Excuse me.
Well, there's a feeling that especially rural Republican lawmakers need to go home with something in hand saying, look, this is what I did to help address this issue. But that price tag, I have not seen yet where the caucus is for Republicans in the Senate on $10 million. Now, we should get new revenue numbers before too long.
Yes.
There's no guarantee they'll be higher.
Right.
But we kind of talked in the last year about how corporate tax legislation looked pretty good so far in the fiscal year. So maybe there's more money in the till to use for stuff. Maybe. Maybe that loosens the kind of the purse strings, but we got to watch that issue.
Okay, and you and I watched the press releases after these news conferences. So immediately, Assembly Speaker Voss, Majority Leader Steinke said, we really like this. Mm-hmm. Gordon Hintz said, I want to commend the governor. I want to commend the Democrats on the Speaker's Task Force. Nothing from Fitzgerald.
No. Don't forget the governor also released his kind of like report on clean
45
water.
45 minutes before the news.
Now, we were told that there was not meant to undercut anybody, that, you know, this is all kind of in concert with each other. But anyway, there is that. Don't forget that PFAS issue. There's a vote in the Senate committee this week about, so PFAS are these chemicals in firefighting foam, nonstick cookware, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Big issue in Marinette, Peshtigo area. John Nygren, co-chair of the Finance Committee, also in Madison, and that they found traces of that in various places. That committee vote was split along partisan lines.
3-2, Republicans yes, Dems no.
Democrats want a more ambitious bill that Republicans say goes too far, would blow up industry, in the words of Rob Coles, the chair of that committee. The science to support it, but either way, there's a split on that issue. So you've got at least three fronts, really. You've got this water package, and kind of the governor's, you know, report. You've got the PFAS bill, which is like firefighting foam, that stuff, like addressing this.
Yep.
And then thirdly, there is a bill that Dems proposed called the CLEAR Act. It's the more aggressive version to deal with the issues in the firefighting foam bill. That one is now in negotiations between Rob Coles, chair of the Natural Resources Committee, John Nygren, again, co-chair of finance, who's from the area, one of the areas most impacted, Dave Hansen, also from Green Bay, a Democrat senator. They're all working on this. So can you get these three pieces through oh, by the way, it's early January. We're getting done by end of February.
And Hansen at that meeting called PFAS the next CPB issue, major catastrophe. Okay, time to hear from the co-chairs of the Assembly Task Force, and we want to walk through five of the specific recommendations. Please.
Wisconsinites rely on this important resource as a pillar of both the economy through agriculture, industry, and tourism, and our health through clean drinking water. As Representative Shanklin has said, it is our intention to continue working on this important issue next session and beyond.
This is a great opportunity for us to work together and move the ball forward on water quality. I especially appreciate the people who came to the hearings, testified at 14 different hearings, and who emphasized the need to act now to protect current and future generations from having to drink bottled water.
Next 2 months.
Let's walk through five of the big ticket items. Let's walk through the first one, $2.9 million to hire more county land and water conservation officers. Now, they made a big deal about saying, we funded these professionals in the budget, but we're adding $2.9 million. That's the biggest single upper in the $10 million package. Any PS on that?
No. Again, it's August. You start adding these things up and get to that price tag.
Yeah. $900,000 to fund the Center for Watershed Science and Education. Correct me if I'm wrong. On the campus of UW-Stevens Point?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Okay. $800,000 more for programs that replace contaminated wells, making wells that are contaminated by nitrates a higher priority. Yep. $250,000 for the Clean Sweep program to collect and dispose of firefighting foam with PFAS, and $150,000 to hire one FTE, one person, a director of a new Office of Water Policy. And, JR, you probably went through those recommendations. The what they expect this new director to do is like four people's jobs. It was just really okay. So, but you know, JR, just a PS on this. You and I went through the governor's report issued 45 minutes before the news conference. He said if you replace the estimate in that report, if you replace all the private wells that exceed the nitrate standard, the cost is $440 million. So this is kind of a down payment, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, think about the cost. Let's expand the cost. How much would it cost you to replace all the lead pipes
in
various cities across Wisconsin, right? I mean, like, this is an issue that is not new.
Right.
But it has percolated up. Again, you have southwestern Wisconsin with its issues. You have the Marinette-Peshtigo area. You've got Milwaukee. You've got Matt. I mean, again, it is not just a regional issue, and it is going across not just a Republican area or Democratic area, but it's going across these regions, and they got to figure out something and go back home and say, hey, we did something about this.
And it's also an issue that's kind of only exploded in the last 14 months, clean water. Okay, let's talk about a new subject. We took last week off and had a wonderful time with our families. Go back to the controversy over moved voters. And let's just walk through four things that happened. And the Court of Appeals said it would not review the judge's purge order. The judge, Ozaukee County judge?
Malloy, yes.
Okay, but there's a footnote on that because yesterday the Department of Justice asked the Supreme Court to either take the case or order the Court of Appeals to review.
So here's what happened. So Malloy issued his order, okay, that saying that Elections Commission, you're wrong. The state law says you have 30 days that if these guys who may have moved, you send them a letter and say, hey, you've got to, we want to check what's going on. If they don't respond in 30 days, they're off the rolls, period. Okay. DOJ appealed that to the 4th District saying, we think this is wrong. We want you to step in. Now, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, conservative group, while that was going on, went to the state Supreme Court with a conservative majority and said, hey, take this case directly.
Yes.
It's going to get there anyway. We want you to take it.
Right.
Will argued that because they asked the state Supreme Court to take over the appeal, that meant the 4th District Court of Appeals issue proceedings were moot, essentially. They had to be stayed while this request was pending. DOJ went and said, hey, just so you know, Judge Malloy has been asked to start fining the Elections Commission and five members $2,000 each a day, $12,000 total.
In contempt.
For not doing this.
We'll get to that in a
so
minute.
So we need you to do something.
Right.
Again, please do this.
Okay.
Fourth said, no, we're going to wait for the Supreme Court. Now DOJ is back at the state Supreme Court saying, okay, they're saying they're not going to do this. Tell them to do it or you take it up. We need something to kind of have some clarity here. And oh, by the way, don't forget, there's a federal lawsuit pending right now.
Yep.
League of Women Voters saying that there weren't adequate warnings in these letters going out to these possible movers. Therefore, it should be all overturned. And now lawmakers and Will are saying
that's
federal
point
judge,
two. That's what
up.
That's what I want to get to. Okay, so the first point is Court of Appeals said they wouldn't review the judge's purge mm-hmm. order. Now let's get to the second point. GOP leaders asked that the federal court not get involved.
Yeah.
Who are they to ask federal judges on a voting rights issue?
Respect the state issue. Let it play out in state courts. Also, Republicans have hired private attorneys again in this case, saying that noting that Josh Call, the Democratic Attorney General, represents the Election Commission, is basically siding with our, as, you know, kind of over here on the opposite side. He's not representing our views. Therefore, we say state law to them says 30 days or you're done. They're saying Call's not there. We need our own attorneys for this. So it's, you almost need a flow chart at this point to keep track of legal actions
right.
going on.
And so the next thing I want to point out is that on December 30th, the Elections Commission, again, for the second time, deadlocked 3-3 and voted not to purge or remove these voters, more than 200,000.
I'm stunned that a partisan commission that split evenly between partisans cannot reach an agreement on
yes,
something
but
like this.
Go back when they replace when they created the Elections Commission, they said we're going
to
have three D's, three R's,
and
they're all going to have a kumbaya moment. Well, okay. And the secondly, as you just said, Will, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, has now asked who? The Supreme Court to find?
State Supreme Court. They want the court to take the case. I mean, think about it. So the Fourth District Court of Appeals, so Republicans some years ago passed a law allowing the state to, when a state law goes to a circuit court, to pick the appeals court where you go.
You can
for
shop.
The appeal.
You can shop. What?
Shocking that a Democratic Attorney General, again, I hope you guys understand I'm being a little sarcastic here, went to the 4th District, which is a Democratic, basically liberally controlled court, for its appeal. Will, shockingly, wants a Supreme Court with a 5-2 conservative majority to hear the case instead. Crane's going to get there anyway in the state courts.
Yeah.
But they want to be the prosecutor and go to a more friendly venue than the 4th.
Okay. All right. New topic. The planners of the Democratic National Convention, July 13 through 16 in Milwaukee, welcomed media from the nation, maybe the world, to come in to come and meet Milwaukee. Now, what's the purpose of that, JR? Were they teaching them that in Milwaukee it's not a water fountain, it's a bubbler? Were they teaching them how to say ANA? What did they do?
Well, a couple of things. One, there were a number of off-the-record kind of like walkthroughs of here's how security works, here's how you apply for your credential. There's also this kind of public piece. This goes back to like the symbolism of bringing the convention to Milwaukee, which is one, the blue wall. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania crumbled in 2016.
Yep.
Democrats want to reinforce, we're going to rebuild that blue wall. Wisconsin is a key cog in that. Two, they want to fix the problem that happened in 2016, which Hillary Clinton, post-primary, didn't come back to Wisconsin.
Primary, she lost to Bernie Sanders.
Didn't come back to Wisconsin because they thought it was in the bag.
Yep.
They neglected the state, and all of a sudden, Donald Trump won by less than 23,000 votes. So there's that symbolism there, like we're here, we're fixing what we did wrong the last time, we're committed to these Midwestern values, we're going to show you guys that we're there for you on these issues, we're paying attention. This is part of that focus.
Okay, and the planners say it may draw 50,000 people to southeast Wisconsin. They'll be staying in some Illinois hotels. And they also said, it was interesting, the Journal Sentinel reported that they have met their fundraising goal. Now, I don't remember the number. Do you remember?
Yeah, the Business Journal also had that they originally, it was $20 million was the original, kind of the first piece. They got $25 million, I believe.
Yep.
So they're exceeding that. Now, I think they have to get to like $70 million overall. So the issue, one of the issues is conventions don't file like periodic campaign finance reports, so we can't see how that's working. But it's a matter of the progress, I should say. But it's a matter of attracting those corporate donations and others from unions and others to try and get to that mark. Now, there's still a concern from conservatives that you're going to see taxpayers bear the burden of certain things like security. I think federal government, I can't remember how much money they allocate.
I think for $70 million.
For both, that, each convention gets a pocket
wrong.
Of money to pull this off.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's the cost going to be, if any, on locals, on the police, on sheriff's department, on first response? I mean,
well,
on the list.
What are you hearing? I assume the planners stuffed the national media with brats and beer. did Milwaukee come off pretty well in its show and tell moment?
You know, good question. It's the down payment of this whole show. I mean, like for Milwaukee, it is not a top tier city. And I mean that, I don't mean respect Milwaukee, but it's not Chicago, it's not New York, it's not Miami, it's not Los Angeles. It is not a city where you think of my national convention goes here right away, right? Usually these conventions are in those bigger Houston, these bigger cities.
Well, the Republicans are going to Charlotte,
Miami,
Texas, you know. Yeah. Austin.
here's a chance for Milwaukee to prove its kind of grit on a national stage that we can pull something like this off and do it well. So it's a challenge for them.
Okay, now let's hear from the planners and Governor Evers as they were part of this Meet Milwaukee tour.
We fell short in 2016, and while you can't boil the outcome of any election down to one cause, one of the errors that we made was failing to communicate as effectively as we could in key states. In fact, here in Wisconsin, overall turnout was the lowest that it's been in 20 years. So as we plan our convention, we'll be doing everything we can to put Wisconsin on the map. When we bring the eyes of the world to Wisconsin, we're going to remind the American people what Democrats stand for, from affordable health care to higher wages to common sense gun reform. And if we pull that off, I am confident that we will win in November.
I truly believe that Wisconsin will be the state that elects a new president of the United States. It was key last time, and it's key this time. My goal as governor, especially during our primary in April, is to make sure that every single candidate that's still in there, and I think there will be many, and I think having that big tent is really an advantage, not a disadvantage. Every one of them gets to Wisconsin and talks about the issues that are important to them, and I think that will set the stage for what's going to be happening in July in Wisconsin.
Also this week, the Presidential Preference Committee, the group that formally lists mm-hmm. candidates for the April 7 presidential primary. Let's talk about their first decision, only to list Republican incumbent President Donald J. Trump. Now, you had reported there was speculation that they might list others, but they decided just to go with Trump. Why?
Basically, the argument was that nobody else was viable. So remember, this commission is comprised equally of members from the Democratic and Republican parties, right? Because they're the only parties that reached a certain threshold in the last statewide elections, so they're only going to have a primary for president. Now, there's another way to get on the ballot. The people who didn't make it, i.e. Bill Weld, former Massachusetts governor, Joe Walsh, former Illinois congressman, can collect, if they want to, 8,000 signatures between now and, I think, the
end of January 28th.
They must have, of that 8,000, at least 1,000 from each congressional district.
Yes.
To put that in perspective, when you run for governor or state Supreme Court, a typical statewide election, you have to collect a minimum of 2,000 signatures over a six-week period. This is a high bar to cross. The reality is for Mr. Weld, Mr. Walsh, they don't have a campaign operation in Wisconsin. They don't have a network of supporters who can go out and collect those signatures. They're not going to make the ballot. There are two trains of thoughts on this. One, Walsh and Weld hadn't proved any viability. They hadn't really done anything in Wisconsin. Yes, they're tweeting. But beyond that, are they doing anything to ensure that they're a proven candidate? So if they're not, Barack Obama didn't have a primary opponent in 2012. There were other states where he had primary opponents. Even in West Virginia, I think a convicted felon who was serving time during the campaign got 40% in the West Virginia primary.
Right.
But here, there was no viability, therefore no point. Now, again, those trends of thought. One, if you're Trump, you brag about all the time that you have 95% approval rating from the Republican Party, right? If you have a primary and you're at 80%, 75%, is that embarrassing? You know, why have that? If Walsh and Weld are not going to win, why risk that? You might irritate, if you're Republicans, some of the base by putting a challenger on the primary ballot up as Donald Trump when he is enjoying 88% approval rating among Republicans in the last Marquette University Law School poll.
Yep.
The flip side is, though, that think about the state Supreme Court race. We've talked about this before. Democrats, we expect, no guarantee, but we expect to have a contested primary still going on come April. That means there should be a higher turnout for Democrats than you only have for a spring election. That should, and I'm using words like should, we expect, because you'll guarantee.
Additional words.
That should benefit the progressive challenger Daniel Kelly, the conservative Supreme Court justice. If you had a primary against Trump, maybe it helped drive Republican turnout, which would then bleed over in the Supreme Court race and help Kelly. Now, a couple caveats here. I've heard the argument this week that, look, go back to 2012 when Scott Walker faced a recall election. Remember that primary? He had a fake primary, right?
Yes, he did a fake primary.
Democrats, he actually ended up getting not that many fewer votes than the entire Democratic field in that primary. It was a way for people who backed Scott Walker turn out and show their support for him. So one theory is, hey, the fact Trump is there, period, people will turn out, Republicans, because they want to show they're unhappy about impeachment, about Democrats, etc., that surge will be there and it'll help trickle over the Supreme Court race. Maybe.
Yeah.
But without that, how do you get that turnout for Kelly up to where the Democratic primary is going to be? They're going to use this as a dry run. By they, I mean the state Republican, state Democratic parties will use the April election as a dry run for November. They'll engage their turnout operations, you know, the phone calls and door knocking, the lit pieces. They'll do that ahead of April to try drive turnout and see how it looks for November, work out some kinks. Maybe that helps.
Okay. Okay, now let's talk about the Democrats. They've slated, no surprises here, 14. Biden and Bennett and Booker and Klobuchar and Sanders and Warren and Bloomberg, Buttigieg and Delaney and Gabbard, excuse me, and Deval Patrick and Tom Steyer, the businessman, Marianne Williamson and John Yang. They're not all going to be on the ballot on April 7th. I mean, they could be.
They'll be on the ballot.
But let's talk about the mechanics. If they drop between now and then.
There's a deadline to tell the Elections Commission you don't want to be on the ballot. I can't remember what date it is. But if you're still in there, you are still on the ballot come April because they have to be produced 45 days out.
True.
So
true.
Even if somebody drops out in March, they'll probably still be on the ballot come April and that kind of thing. We had that in 2016, I believe, with Republicans who dropped out of the race for president. They were still on the primary ballot at that time.
And just a P.S., since we're talking about the presidential election, Trump is scheduled to come to Milwaukee this Monday.
Mm-hmm. Tuesday.
Tuesday. 14th. Thank you very much. The 14th, the same night that there's a Democratic debate.
In Iowa.
The last one before Iowa.
And there's a Bucks game downtown Milwaukee, too.
Very busy. Okay, new subject. Seven have filed to run to replace Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley. I'm just interested in your early handicapping. Theo Lipscomb, County Chair, Senator Chris Larson, Representative David Crowley, Brian Kennedy, former labor leader, now a mayor, Jim Sullivan, former state senator, who is had run Mr. Abley's human services, conservative Native Indian Nath, and a Metro Transit executive, and I'm not going to embarrass myself by trying to pronounce his name. What are your thoughts on the seven?
I want to see the fundraising reports, which I believe are out next week. I also want to see where's Chris Abley's money go. Mr. Abley has proven he will play in primaries and other races.
He's got two political groups for him.
Deep pockets that he has. There's a perception that Jim Sullivan is kind of like the anointed Abley candidate, so he might benefit from Abley's largesse. That would be a big boost in a crowded primary. But yeah, watch the fiscal finance reports, see who's proving viability, who's doing what, and where's Abley money go out of that primary.
Okay, and just a P.S., Mayor Tom Barrett wants a new term on April 7th. Lena Taylor opposing him? Who
yes.
else?
Other people are in the race right now, but there'll be a multiple candidate primary, I believe, in February.
Multiple candidate primary. Okay, let's go to your stock reports. Rising.
Rising. Scott Fitzgerald. Back in September, Jim Sensenbrenner, a longtime congressman, announced he was going to seek re-election. That was like sent a ripple across Republican landscape because this guy had been in office for four decades. The thought was there would be the spirited primary for the 5th Congressional District. Well, after this week, Matt Newman told me he's not going to run for the 5th Congressional District. That means that basically you have Scott Fitzgerald, the only announced Republican candidate for that seat. Barring somebody getting in late, it is almost like a guarantee he'll be the next congressman from the 5th. The reason is this. Very Republican seat. Yes, there's miracles happen, so a Democrat could win in theory. But generally speaking, Republican primaries and heavy Republican seats generally produce the next Republican congressman from that district. Fitzgerald, to his credit, put the work in, got in early, has locked up support. There is still room, people tell me, for a deep-pocketed Republican from Waukesha County, which is the heart of that district in terms of votes, to get in, write a big check, and run. But the longer it takes that person to emerge, the tougher it is because you give more time for Fitzgerald to lock up endorsements and lock up money.
Okay. And mixed.
We have mixes. Oh, contested judicial races. Look, Supreme Court race is going to be a huge deal this spring. Beyond that, on the judicial ballot, not much. Of the 37 judicial races, only 9 are contested. Of those, 2 are noteworthy. 2 are 2 of Scott Walker's final appointees to the bench. In December of 2018, as it out the way out the door, made 2 appointments. They both made the ballot. They have challenges this spring. And Lisa Neubauer, who was a Supreme Court candidate last year, lost. She has a conservative-leaning district. What's going to happen with her this spring?
Yeah. Okay. And then falling.
Falling. Senate Democrats. Dave Hansen announced his retirement this week. Look, Dave Hansen was able to hold that seat often up from the top of the ticket. So he was kind of like impervious to the Republican efforts. Now that he's not going to run for re-election, it makes the map much tougher for Democrats. Now you got to try to hold on to a seat that leans Republican. You have Patty Schottner up in western Wisconsin, who won a seat that Trump won by 17 points in a special election. That's a difficult hold. It could mean Jennifer Schilling, who won re-election by less than 70 votes in 2016, could be the key to whether Republicans get to a two-thirds majority in that chamber this spring,
okay,
this fall.
Okay, I want to talk about the Hansen race. He represents District 30. Mm-hmm. He was elected in 2000, I believe.
Do 2000, I have that? The first term, yeah.
2000. The last time he was elected against...
Eric Wimberger.
Wimberger.
2016.
Hansen got 51.2% of the vote. So that district is really in play, isn't it?
Well, look at it this way. Donald Trump also got 51.7% of the vote in that district. I mean, think about that. Trump won it by 10 points.
Okay.
And Hansen outperformed Hillary Clinton by more than 10 points in that district. That's noteworthy. You don't see that often.
Okay, but I'm not done with this race yet, because when you look at the three reps in the 30th Senate District, John Mako and John Nygren and Democrats Stash Grzynski, who was just asked by his peers to consider resigning, do you see either Representatives Mako or Nygren running?
I think Mako has said no. Nygren said, I'll think about it, but acknowledge it would be a high bar because he's co-chair of the Finance Committee.
Yeah.
Why go from being co-chair of the most powerful committee in the legislature to being a freshman in the span of a couple months, right? That's maybe a tough sell for him.
Okay. And one other P.S. There's another lawmaker who announced this week they weren't going to seek re-election, Republican Representative Bob Culp from Stratford. He's been representing the 69th District since the special election in 2013. Before that, that's that safe district?
Pretty Republican seat. So the primary is going to be the whole key about that one, I think. I mean, granted, miracles do happen, but I think Trump won like upper 50s, maybe even close to 60% of the vote in 2016 in that district. I'm using the Trump numbers because it's back to presidential turnout.
Yes.
So that's what I'm looking back to 2016, but it's a pretty Republican seat.
Okay, now let's do a recast. Incumbent legislators who said they're not going to run. Senator Hansen, Representative Culp, and Representative Mike Roarcast of Nina in District 55. Are you hearing that we're going to hear some other major retirements?
Robin Voss told me before the holidays he expected a record low number of retirements, but I'm not sure how low that record is. Don't forget, Rob Stassholt is running for the state Senate.
Against Schottner in District 10?
Yes, he also has expected a primary. A woman's running there in that race as well right now. So there'll be other departures. I'm just not sure who and where at this point are going to retire.
Okay, now let's look ahead a little bit. We have another Charles Rankin poll coming next week. The Assembly is going to be in session, I think, within 2 weeks, right? Then the Governor's State of the State on Wednesday the 22nd.
Yes.
Anything else of note?
I hope not. It's a busy week next week.
First Rewind of 2020. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January. What's the date, J.R.? 10.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.